Okay, so now let's talk about sensory behaviors. Now, sensory behaviors are a little bit different than our other categories. With escape behaviors, attention behaviors, tangible behaviors, those behaviors are impacted by what's going on in the environment. So we have a little more control. We can control the level of attention or what escape looks like, what demands look like. But with sensory behaviors, something internally is satisfying about that response. Now remember, we all engage in sensory behaviors. This is not exclusive to autism or special ed. You twirling your hair, you fidgeting, you cracking your knuckles, those are all sensory responses. Now, my big take-home point with you on sensory responses is that not all sensory behaviors should be targeted for decrease. Just because you find it annoying or other people find it annoying doesn't mean it's necessarily a bad thing. We all engage in self-soothing in different ways. What we're gonna really focus on in this course are sensory behaviors that are dangerous. Obviously, those are gonna be targeted for decrease, and sensory behaviors that are extremely stigmatizing or greatly impede learning. So with that, there's some things we can do on the proactive side, and then in videos 9 and 10 of this module, we're also gonna give some additional strategies that you can use for sensory-related behaviors. As I mentioned, the first step with approaching sensory behaviors is to decide if the behavior should be targeted for decrease. As a special education teacher or clinician working in the special ed world, people outside of our community might approach you about your student or child's behavior because it bothers them. Flapping, spinning, making noises might be disruptive, but we also do want to identify that these are behaviors that are in some way calming or feel good to the child, and they might need that to really cope with all of the other stressors that are placed upon each of our children. So keep in mind that just because it's a problem for someone else doesn't mean it's necessarily a problem for our kids. What we're gonna be focusing on is decreasing behavior that is dangerous, extremely disruptive, or extremely stigmatizing. Basically, does it have a negative impact on that learner's life? We're gonna be teaching where and when for those non-dangerous behaviors and really working on decreasing for the dangerous ones. So as I said, our non-dangerous sensory behaviors. We're gonna work on discrimination. We're gonna teach where and when these are appropriate. Our dangerous sensory behaviors, we are working towards eliminating. We all engage in sensory behaviors. This is nothing special to autism. This is nothing special to children, children with special needs, children with IEPs. You and I engage in sensory behaviors all the time. But we can also utilize really good discrimination skills on where and when sensory behaviors are appropriate. Sometimes that's what your child could be missing. They could just be missing that discrimination skill. Like, it would be pretty weird if in the middle of me giving a presentation to 100 people, I laid on the ground and did a stretch and cracked my back. Even though that felt good, I have the discrimination skills to identify that it's not appropriate to do while I'm in the middle of giving a presentation. What we can do is we can teach alternative sensory responses to our kids. We can select an alternative response that's maybe either more appropriate, less disruptive, that can be done more quietly, or can be accessible a little bit more easily. This might still provide the student regular and consistent access to that sensory reinforcer, but in that less disruptive way. So different types of sensory toys can be really helpful here, fidgets, things like that. Can still maybe give the input that that child needs in a way that can be utilized more readily on a daily basis. Incorporate this into your day. If you have a sensory center or some type of sensory break area and the student really seems to enjoy that, then make sure that there's a way they can request it. Add some structure, maybe add a schedule. You really want this to be something you can teach the child how to utilize for coping. If it calms them down, teach them how to identify those triggers of when they need that self-soothing and then go access that. I love sensory choice boards and any way we can really tie functional communication to these responses and these activities. These activities are likely fairly reinforcing, so we want to take the opportunity to incorporate communication within that. If a sensory behavior is not dangerous, they might be pretty reinforcing, as we said. So this could be something you utilize as a reinforcer in your classroom and have the child work for. They can work for jumping on the trampoline or playing with a sand bin or something like that. And it could be a really powerful reinforcer as it's something your kids likely really enjoy. Identify potential sources of sensory overload. Again, sensory overload is nothing specific to autism, nothing specific to this population. I have times where I have sensory overload. Sensory overload is that kind of combination of too many sensory experiences at one time. So really work to identify activities and environments that might lead to sensory overload with your learners. Allow breaks, schedule in those breaks, and/or give a method for communicating the breaks. You want to give your kids an out. If the only way they have an out is by engaging in negative behavior, this is now an escape from sensory response. We want the escape from sensory response to be some communicative approach instead of headbanging, yelling, screaming, running out of the room. I made a quick cheat sheet here for proactive sensory behavior strategies. I think these are awesome to share with gen ed teachers, clinicians, specials teachers, because these types of behaviors are going to be happening within every classroom in the school you work in. So you as the special educator can really be the resource for everyone on how to proactively help our kids who struggle with different sensory experiences. So we aren't quite done with sensory behaviors yet. Modules 9 and 10 will be covering some more strategies that can be well suited for sensory behaviors, especially those that might be dangerous. Overall, if you are dealing with a dangerous sensory behavior that involves the head, head banging, head hitting, anything that involves blunt trauma to the head, even if it seems minor, this is something you really want to call in someone else about, because there's just not enough known about the long-term effects of repeated impact to the brain. So if it's in this situation, and if even it's just like that light tap that seems to happen often, you definitely want to bring in some other medical professionals to consult with your child or individual to make sure you're on the right track.